Jesse's office was crowded. He was there at his desk. And seated to his right was Nick Petrocelli, the new town council. In front of them, in a broad semicircle, were the two Hopkins boys, their father, Charles, their mother, Kay, and their lawyer, Brendan Fogarty. Beyond them were Carlton Jenks Sr., Carlton Jenks Jr., known as Snapper, and the Jenks lawyer, Abby Taylor. Earl gave Jesse the finger while pretending to scratch his upper lip. He and Robbie both smirked. Snapper was expressionless. Fogarty spoke.
As you know, Stone, and as I warned you, the district attorney's office has decided that your case against these lads is so tainted by the way you treated them that they won't bring it to trial.
Jesse was motionless, his swivel chair tipped back, while he gave Fogarty his stone-faced stare. To his right, Petrocelli was equally motionless, looking bored, staring at the side window at the late gathering evening. He was a dark, slim young guy who wore glasses with big, thick black frames. Jesse wasn't sure about him. Petrocelli had graduated from Harvard Law not very long ago and put in time as a prosecutor in Suffolk County before he joined a big Boston firm as a litigator. He had moved to Paradise after that and become pro bono town council when Abby Taylor resigned. But he wasn't 30 yet, Jesse was pretty sure. There was about him a hint of Ivy League condescension, and, in the few times Jesse had been with him, he seemed bored in his duties. Fogarty, Jesse noticed, responded to Petrocelli with inadequately concealed amusement. Even Abby, who, except in certain areas that Jesse knew of, was the essence of propriety, seemed heedless of Petrocelli. On the other hand, Jesse thought, the price is right. Fogarty went on.
And it is that same precipitous treatment of these boys that has brought us here tonight. We intend to bring suit for false arrest and imprisonment.
Jesse turned his stare from Fogarty for a moment and looked at Abby Taylor. She nodded.
We are part of the suit, Jesse, she said.
Jesse didn't speak. His stare rested heavily once again on Fogarty.
Do you have anything to say? Fogarty asked.
Jesse glanced over at Petrocelli. Nick?
It's America, Jesse. Say whatever you want.
Jesse nodded as if that were sage advice. He kept nodding slightly as he looked carefully at each of the people seated in front of him.
What are you all doing here? Jesse said.
I told you, Fogarty began. Jesse interrupted. Nobody had to come here for that. You could have sent me a notice in the mail. Why are you here?
Well, Kay Hopkins said, I can tell you why I'm here.
Her husband said, Kay,
don't you shush me, Charles. I wanted to look right into the eyes of the kind of man who would mistreat two little kids.
Mistreat, Jesse said.
Arrested falsely, imprisoned falsely, frightened to death, what would you call it?
You guys frightened, Jesse said to the Hopkins brothers.
Oh, sure, Earl said. We was frightened to death, wasn't we, Robbie?
Scared to death, Robbie said and giggled slightly. Jesse nodded and looked at their mother.
Don't you talk to them, she said.
You don't want them talked to. What did you bring them for?
I wanted them to learn that the system does work, that they have parents who will stand up to it and make it work, that police brutality is unacceptable.
You feel the same way, Jesse said to Charles Hopkins.
I feel my sons were badly treated, Hopkins said. I want to see justice done.
How about you, Jenks?
I haven't decided what I'm here for yet, Jenks said.
I'm listening. Jesse leaned back in his chair a little farther. Petrocelli seemed almost asleep. He had one elbow on the edge of Jesse's desk and was resting his chin on his fist. He didn't appear to be looking at anything. Jesse surveyed the parents. Charles Hopkins wore a good suit and tie. He was a slim, unathletic-looking man who parted his hair low on the left side and swooped it up over his bald spot. His wife was just overweight enough to make her chic business suit ride a little at the hips. She had a lot of blonde hair and considerable eyeshadow and a hard mouth. Snapper's father was a big man with square hands and a crew cut.
His neck was thick. He wore desert boots and khaki pants, and a white short-sleeved dress shirt open at the neck. His forearms were muscular. "So, what have you guys learned so far?" Jesse said.
"That you can't push us around and get away with it," Earl said.
"Yeah, that's what I learned too," Robbie said.
Jesse looked at the parents. "Good enough," he said.
"No," Kay Hopkins said. "I demand that you apologize to these boys."
"Mrs. Hopkins," Fogarty said, and put a hand out as if to keep her at bay. "We hired you, Fogarty," Kay Hopkins said. "You didn't hire us. I'll talk when I want to talk. Mrs. Hopkins, as your attorney..." "Oh, be quiet! Stone, are you ready to apologize?"
"I'm ready to talk," Jesse said, "as soon as it's my turn."
"I'd like to hear him," Carlton Jenks said. His voice was deep, and there was authority in it.
"Anyone else got anything to say?" Jesse said.
"I don't want to cut you off."
He looked over the group. No one else spoke. Outside the office windows, it was dark. "Okay. Here's what I know. I know that there were two perfectly nice guys living a perfectly nice life in a perfectly nice house, and these three kids burned it down for the hell of it."
"You can't prove that," Kay said.
"I didn't say I could," Jesse answered. "I said I know it. Robbie told me." Jesse reached across his desk and punched up the tape recorder.
"No!"
It was clearly Robbie's voice.
"No, I wasn't even in the house. I was outside watching Chickie for the cops."
"Oh, so who set the fire?" Jesse's voice sounded calm.
"I don't know. I wasn't even in there. Earl had the gas can."
"You're trying to tell me that he was in there with Snapper?"
"Snapper told us he found an open window at the fag house, and he'd been in there and tagged the walls in the living room. Earl stole the gas from my dad for the power mower, and him and Snapper told me to watch for the cops, and they went in the house."
"Through the window?"
"No, Snapper left the door unlocked."
"And you went in and torched the place?"
"No!"
The sound of panic in Robbie's voice was oppressive in the crowded room.
"No, I didn't. Snapper and Earl torched it."
Jesse reached over and shut off the tape recorder.
"Fucking squealer," Snapper said.
"He's lying," Earl said. "Brat."
Carlton Jenks put a hand on his son's knee.
"We're here to listen, son, not to talk."
"That's not admissible evidence," Kay Hopkins said. "You intimidated him into saying it."
"Kay," Fogarty said.
"Shut up."
"You weren't in the house," Jesse said to Earl.
"No."
Jesse sighed and ran the tape fast forward and punched play.
"Snapper made me do it," Earl's voice said. It was shaky, as if he'd been crying. "We went in the house just to look around, and then we got in there, and Snapper made me help him."
"Stop it," Kay Hopkins said. "Stop the tape."
Jesse punched stop. Kay Hopkins was pale, and there was a small tremor in her shoulders. Beside Jesse, Nick Petrocelli had his feet up on the windowsill. His eyes were closed.
"I didn't say that," Earl said. "You did too, liar," Robbie said. "You're the liar," Earl said.
Kay Hopkins turned and slapped the son that was nearest. It was Earl. His eyes filled and his face reddened.
"Kay," her husband said. "You bastards," she said to her sons. "See what you make me do? Do you like seeing me like this?"
"For God's sakes, Kay," Fogarty almost shouted. "Will you shut the hell up?"
She spun toward him in her chair as if she might slap him too. Her husband stood and put his hands on her shoulders. Jesse hoped she didn't have a weapon.
"Mrs. Hopkins," Jesse said, "you either get yourself under control or I'll arrest you for assault on a minor child."
Kay didn't look at him. She shook her shoulders, trying to dislodge her husband's hands, and looked at Abby Taylor.
"Well, goddammit, what about you? You're a woman."
"I think you should be quiet, Mrs. Hopkins. I think you should let your attorney speak for you. I know Chief Stone. He will do what he says he will do." Slumped on his spine in the chair by the window with his feet still on the windowsill, Petrocelli opened his eyes and pushed his glasses up on his nose.
"You've probably guessed, Brandon, what the heart of our defense will be if you bring false arrest charges."
"I don't like to guess, Nick."
Regardless of the final disposition of the case, these tapes are very clear evidence that Chief Stone and the Paradise Police had reasonable cause to arrest these boys.
What's that mean? Kay Hopkins said.
It means he'll pretty likely get to play these tapes in court, Fogarty said.
Can he do that?
Probably. Abby?
I concur.
But they can't try these kids for the crime, Jenks said.
No, Abby said.
Jenks nodded and looked at Jesse.
Okay. My son and I are not going to bring any false arrest suit.
Jesse nodded. Jenks looked at his son.
You work too hard at being a tough guy. We'll talk about that at home.
You're a tough guy, Snapper said.
Maybe too tough. We'll talk about that too.
He stood up.
We're free to go?
Jesse nodded again.
Jenks took hold of his son's arm and stood him up from the chair. Snapper didn't resist. His father's hand seemed to make him still.
Come on, Snap, Jenks said, and they walked from the room without looking at anyone as they went.
I don't know why you hang out with a boy like that. No mother, father working all the time. No wonder he gets in trouble.
Mrs. Hopkins, Jesse said, Snapper's got problems, but he's a stand-up kid. He didn't blame either of your sons, and when he heard them blaming him, he didn't deny it.
So?
So your own two kids are a mess. They're criminals. They burned down a couple's house because the couple was gay, if they even know what it means. Neither would accept any blame. They blamed Snapper. They blamed each other. Not much honor there. Not much loyalty. No pride at all.
Don't you lecture me about my children, Kay said.
Lecture's over, but here's a warning. Every day one of us will look at them. We catch them breaking the law, we will do our best to get them the maximum punishment allowed.
And I'll have you for harassing them.
Put that energy into getting them some help, ma'am. Everyone was quiet for a moment. Then Petrocelli spoke again.
So, he said, you bringing suit or no?
Fogarty looked at his clients.
Your call, he said.
Kay Hopkins said,
well, you're the damn lawyer, Brendan. What do we pay you for?
I pay him, Charles Hopkins said. No, we won't bring suit.
Then I see no reason to linger, Fogarty said and stood up. You need a ride, Abby?
No, I'll stay and talk with Nick and Chief Stone for a minute, she said.
Okay.
Fogarty looked at his clients.
We should go.
Charles and Kay Hopkins and their sons stood and walked out without a word. Fogarty nodded at Petrocelli and at Jesse and went out after them and closed the door.
We need more walking around money, Macklin said.
How much you figure, Crow said.
Got a lot of mouths to feed, including yours. Still got some preparation time. I figure maybe 20, 25 would do it.
You got any thoughts? Crow said.
Nope. You're the force guy. Go force us some money.
When Crow smiled, deep vertical lines indented on each side of his mouth.
Small bills, Crow said.
Be nice, Macklin said.
See what I can do.
When Crow was gone, Macklin went into the kitchen and had coffee and raspberry pie with Faye.
Think he'll come up with the money? Faye said.
Yeah, Crow's the best.
I thought you were the best, Jimmy.
Well, yeah, I am, but Crow thinks he's some kind of fucking Apache warrior, you know.
Is he Apache?
Hell, I don't know. Says he is.
I don't like him.
Faye, nobody fucking likes Crow. But he's good at his work and he keeps his word.
Has he got anybody? Faye said.
You mean like a wife or a girlfriend?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know anything about Crow except what he can do.
Which is kill people?
Macklin nodded.
He can kill you with his hands, with a gun, with a knife, with an axe, with a stick, with a length of rope, a sock full of sand, a brick. He can kick you to death. He can drop you from 50 feet with a knife, 50 yards with a handgun, 500 with a rifle. He can shoot a bow and arrow. He can probably throw a spear.
Does he like it? Faye said.
He doesn't mind it.
Neither do you.
That's right, but he's not like me. I've seen guys that like it. I've seen guys come off when they kill somebody. He's not like them either. It's that warrior thing. It's like, this is what he does because that's who he is, you know?
Macklin cut another piece of pie and slid it onto his plate. Faye poured more coffee into his cup.
You scared of him?
She said. Macklin looked startled.
Me? No. You know me, Faye. I don't give enough of a shit to be scared of anything.
Faye smiled and nodded. She had only eaten a bit of her pie.
What do you give a shit about, Jimmy?
I've known you since I was a kid, and I'm not sure if there's anything.
You, Faye. You gonna eat the rest of that pie? Faye shook her head, and Macklin slid her plate over in front of him.
You do, don't you? She said.
Care about you?
Yes.
I don't care about much else.
Money?
Oh, yeah.
Actually, that's not even exactly right, Faye said.
She sipped a little coffee and held the cup in front of her face with both hands, looking at Macklin over the rim.
It's not quite the money.
Money's good. We got any cheese?
Refrigerator. In the door thing.
Macklin got up and got the cheese from the compartment in the door of Faye's refrigerator.
What you really like is stealing it, Faye said.
If I had to earn it, we'd be poor, Macklin said.
I doubt it, but that's not the point. You don't want to earn it. You love this. Planning, putting together a crew, drawing maps, buying guns, stealing money to keep us going. You like this better than anything.
No, I like you better than anything.
If I asked you to give this up, would you?
Macklin put down his fork and sat quietly for a moment while he thought about that. Then he said,
Yeah.
Faye sat quietly for longer than he had. Then she said,
Well, I won't ask you to.